I think buying into that is why this team is so good. Obviously, like, we live in a copycat league, but you guys have been showing that that works. You have to respect that as a player. You have to respect it as a coach. You have to respect it as a fan. What they're doing over here is definitely something special. So for me to make the opportunity to open up and to say yes to it, and for them to say yes to it, obviously, in a agreement, you would have to be okay with anything that they have presented to me. And we are in agreement with pretty much everything.
Newest Bills wide receiver Elijah Moore doing his media rounds this week. A little bit on Everybody Eats there. Correction, by the way, from the update. So we do know the compensation. It's a third-round pick going to Dallas and then a pick swap on day three between the Steelers and the Cowboys. Third-round pick going from Dallas to Pittsburgh. George Pickens to the Cowboys. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy had to duck out here on this Wednesday. We have an open segment coming up after this one to get some of your phone calls in, so you can line them up now if you want. But on the Wester Hotline, we have Locked On Bills, Bills Squad, NFL Scouting. Joe Marino is on the Wester Hotline. Morning, Joe. And that Pickens trade, how does that hit you? It was not a deal at all that I was ever thinking about for the Bills. And I guess I'm a little surprised he went for a day two pick, given that he has to be signed.
Yeah, I like the trade a lot for the Steelers. Obviously, George Pickens is a good football player, but I think he's redundant with what they have in DK Metcalf. Obviously, a personality and person that seems very questionable in terms of the football character. And, you know, you got to start thinking about, are you really going to pay this guy? Are you going to commit long-term to this player? And I think for them to be able to flip him for, it looks like a third-round pick and then a swap of a 7 for a 5, I think that's a pretty good deal for Pittsburgh. Now, it doesn't help them this year, but I think the questions about Pittsburgh this year just are mounting, right? Like, who's going to play quarterback? Is it really going to be Mason Rudolph? Are they going to sign up for this Aaron Rodgers circus? You know, that feels complicated. But I think that's the challenge of being a team that's, you know, wins 9 or 10 games, gets into the playoffs, gets smoked in the playoffs, like a good team. Like, the remainder of the team here is really good, but Pittsburgh hasn't been able to find a quarterback, right? And they haven't really had a lot of great opportunities to find one because, you know, they're not picking particularly high in the draft, but it is kind of a, probably for Steelers fans, a very frustrating situation to feel like you're a quarterback away and you're still no closer to the quarterback. Yeah. I guess I get it for Dallas, too. They needed to get another weapon to go with CeeDee Lamb. Now, they got a lot invested in a couple of recent trades in Jonathan Mingo and George Pickens. So, you know, obviously there's a lot into Dak Prescott and his health and Schottenheimer as the coach and what he's been able to mean to Dak Prescott. So I think it puts a little bit of pressure on them. But I really do like this trade for Pittsburgh. And, you know, I don't think you want to stay committed to Pickens. So here's your exit ramp, and they took it.
Right, right. Their whole existence for me, if I'm a Steeler fan, it's just what's my path to getting a quarterback? And maybe this is the year where they finally don't win 8 or 9 games. Like, the roster presents itself where, like, Matt Miller just tweeted this out, like, this is the worst roster of Mike Tomlin's career. So maybe it finally falls off, if you would even agree with that. And we'll get to the Bills, obviously, here. But I feel like a lot of the post-draft discourse about them, Joe, has been more about just that they didn't take a swing on a quarterback earlier. And I don't know how egregious that is. Like, doing it in round one, I think is perfectly acceptable for what they got to not do it. I don't know. Should they have picked Jalen Milroe or Sanders at some point earlier? Like, I don't think that's a crazy take.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that line of thinking, but it almost reminds me a little bit of, like, drought-era Bills, where, you know, there was a lot of criticism. Why didn't they get Brady Quinn? Why didn't they get Jimmy Clausen?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. You kind of compound your issues if you don't actually – believe in the quarterback, right? Like, it doesn't help you to just take a quarterback just to do it. I think you have to have some level of belief that they can be an answer for you. And I don't know, maybe Mason Rudolph can be the perfect tank merchant for this team. Or, I mean, they won games with him down the stretch, right?
That they did.
Script. I mean, they run the ball, play good defense, you know, opportunistic on special teams, and, like, your quarterback just doesn't lose the game. And that's a tough formula, but you can win enough games to keep yourself in the mix. But, I mean, they're probably tired of this path of, all right, you know there's a ceiling on this, and you're going to get bounced in the playoffs by some team that has a legit quarterback. So I'm not sure I have much criticism for not taking a quarterback that you don't believe in. I think I would probably say, why weren't you a team that was very aggressive to, like, move way up? You know, why couldn't you have been the team that goes and gets a Bo Nix or gets in the range to get a Michael Penix or you know, should you have been the Baker Mayfield team? Should you have been the Sam Darnold team? You know, those are probably where I would find more criticisms than, okay, I get it. You don't like Shedeur Sanders. You don't like Jalen Milroe. Those are players with their own set of questions. And, you know, maybe this is a team that should have been more aggressive in other ways.
Right. Rudolph, by the way, right. He did. I mean, he starts a playoff game against the Bills 3-0 in that down the stretch portion of the season in 2023. Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast, Locked On NFL Scouting as well, on the Western Hotline. All right, Joe, so rookie mini camp this week, and we went up through the draft a lot with you last week. I wanted to start, though, with, I mean, this is the beginning of a journey for some of those day three guys to make the team. And this happens, right? Like every year there's a draft pick or two at the end that they go through the spring, they go through training camp, and they don't make that final 53-man roster. So thinking about that question and seeing that you got into the Dorian Strong film, I want to ask you about him, because what his uphill battle might be to make this roster as a six-round pick. We had Carl Jones on earlier in the week from Channel 4, and he likes Strong a lot. And he's not a player I had thought a lot about since they picked him. So what did you see on tape, and what do you feel like his path is to, how hard is it for him making this team?
Well, Dorian Strong, I think, is a really solid player across the board. You can ask him to play any coverage technique, whether that's off man, press, zone. You know, he's really comfortable. I think he's generally a pretty good player in terms of physicality and willingness to take on contact and fit the run. I think he's got pretty good ball skills. But I think that's kind of the thing with Dorian Strong, is he's pretty good across the board, like a very strong baseline skill set. And you're kind of wondering, is there a superpower here? Is there something that he can really hang his hat on to be his trump card that's going to force him to stay, you know, in the mix? And maybe it is just, hey, that whatever you need me to do, I can do it at a sufficient level. And so I think that's probably the story there. And, you know, obviously the Bills have to make choices between a guy like him or Dane Jackson, where, you know, Dane Jackson has started 28 games for the Bills. Probably a similar light as you would talk about Dorian Strong, where, hey, you're not terrible in any one area, but, you know, maybe you don't have a superpower, but there is a proven special teams background with Dane Jackson, and you start talking depth corners, and that matters a ton. And, you know, even where I think that becomes complicated is you need those special teams contributions from your depth at quarterback. Because if you roster Tre'Davious White, he's not going to help in that area. I think he's going to be just like Kyer Elam, where it's either he starts or he's an inactive player, because there's no real value in rostering a guy that can't help you on special teams. And so I think that's what makes it a little bit of a complicated situation. Now, there's probably a lot of value in a four-year contract on a rookie deal, right? So that's going to be a big trump card for him when you're comparing him to a guy like Dane Jackson. And I think ultimately, I think the Bills would love for Dorian Strong to be the rostered player over Dane Jackson. But I think that's a legitimate competition, and I think there's feathers in the hat of both sides of that conversation.
Yeah. Strong, by the way, 8.3 on the RAS score, so he's athletic as well. By the way, coverage of Bills rookie minicamp on WGR, presented by Fiegel, Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys, and by Window Nation, perfect fit for your home and wallet. So Strong, is it fair to say that this would be a class where you'd expect, just because competition, and they'll bring guys in, undrafted guys, veterans, that, you know, there's depth everywhere on this roster, that we could probably see one or two of these draft picks at the end not making the final roster?
Yeah, and I think that's okay. I mean, I know there's a thought out there, is like, why would you draft somebody if they can't make your roster? I mean, I don't know, it happens all the time. And I think especially for teams that are deep like the Bills. I mean, Baltimore drafts like 10 to 14 players a year, it seems like, and a lot of them don't make it, right? And that just speaks to that you have a talented roster that's tough to make. That's not necessarily a bad thing. The two players, though, that I look at from this draft class that I think have the biggest uphill battle to make it are going to be Chase Lunt, the late sixth-round pick out of UConn, the offensive lineman. Not a natural fit at tackle with, you know, zero percentile wingspan, and at 6'7" and a half, not a natural fit for the guard position. And I just, you know, we've seen these offensive linemen get drafted late by the Bills and not make it, whether it's Nick Broeker, Luke Tenuta, Jack Anderson. I think that he can fall right in line. And so unless the Bills roster 10 offensive linemen, or he beats out one of the 9 returning players from last year, or there's injuries, you know, I think Lunt's got an uphill battle. And then Caden Prather, the receiver, the last pick, 7th round. You know, I think we kind of look at the top 5 receivers, and that's what the Bills roster. They roster 5 receivers. Yeah, it's Coleman, Shakir, Palmer, Elijah Moore, and Curtis Samuel. Caden Prather's like in this logjam of Jalen Virgil, Tyrell Shavers, Laviska Shenault, KJ Hamler, like all of those guys, in addition to Prather, competing for the Bills to maybe roster six receivers, something that they typically don't do. So I think those are the two guys that I think have the biggest uphill battle to be a roster draft pick.
Right. And for Prather, like, you got to, I think, prove that you can do other things, special teams or return game. That's where we had Sal on earlier in the week, Joe, and I don't know if you've thought about return game much at all post-draft here, but the new kickoff rule, changing it a little bit where it's a little bit more valuable now to kick it because of them moving where the touchback goes to. And, like, Laviska Shenault was a good returner, one of the better returners in the league last season. So I don't know what they're thinking on that front. Have you thought about, like, whether they would even think about rostering two returners? Because you have Codrington, and I don't know. He was so good last year, I can't imagine that they would want to move on from him.
I think it's really complicated, Joe. I struggle with this because I think, you know, Brandon Codrington had a really good year as a punt returner, right? I thought he did. But does he bring enough value otherwise that you really don't want him playing corner? And he doesn't play other special teams. It's not like he covers kicks and punts. And, you know, you saw even late in the season last year when he was a healthy scratch in the playoffs and they had Khalil Shakir handle the punt return duties, and that enabled the Bills to have another DB active on game day that can actually play. And so I worry about that. And then for the kick return component, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you that Laviska Shenault was a very good kick returner last year. I've done an entire film breakdown on that. It's like he had a couple of good moments, but towards the end, like his last, before he got the Seahawks couldn't wait to get rid of him because his last three returns, he like ran directly into Joe Andreessen and got blown up and then had two goofy fumbles. So I don't know if you can really trust him in that role, and I don't think he does enough other things well to really commit a roster spot to him. So I think Shenault, outside of the fact that he has a couple of years with Chris Tabor, which I know is a talking point that people cling to, I'm not sure he's a guy that I think the Bills should be thinking about rostering. And then I think the Bills should hope that Elijah Moore can be their punt returner. He hasn't really done it in the NFL, only four returns in the NFL, but he's got almost 80 returns in college. That includes fair catches at Ole Miss. And so can he be your wide receiver five and punt returner that then bumps Codrington off your roster because he doesn't do anything besides punt return? You go back to using the Ray Davis, Ty Johnson combo as your kick returners, which you did late in the season, and they're 25% of the snapbacks. I don't know. That feels like the right formula to me to get the most out of all of those roster spots, as opposed to we're going to roster Shenault just to be our kick returner and Codrington to just be our punt returner. I don't know if there's enough value there for that.
Yeah, to your point, I'm looking now at some of the plays he made last year, and it was a couple of huge returns maybe that inflated his number a little bit, on Shenault at least. Joe Marino is with us on the Wester Hotline from Locked On Bills. Joe, I was thinking about this from last year's draft class a little bit. How much impact do you expect that draft class to have going into year number two? Beyond, I mean, Coleman and Bishop are going to be on the field. I think they're going to get an opportunity to grow into their roles and grow into, you know, their roles as players. Past that, I mean, some of these guys, like, you don't get an opportunity unless there's an injury, right? I remember you loving Cedric Van Pran Granger after they draft him, but you're never going to get to see him unless there's an injury, and the Bills have been very healthy up there. So, I don't know, how would you look back on last year's draft class right now, 1 year later, thinking about impact going into 25?
Well, I think you do have to start at the top, and Keon Coleman, probably looking at him to be a 75-ish target guy for this offense, and, you know, hopefully he can be that, the player they drafted to be, the X receiver, leverage battle winner, you know, be good in those contested situations, bring more physicality to the table, be healthy, be the player you were prior to the injury. I think it's that simple. Be that guy for the whole year. Cole Bishop needs to be a starting safety this year. I think that's in the cards for him. You know, I think it was a challenging onboarding system for him, where I don't know if you remember, like, listening to him talk during OTAs, it felt like the guy was drinking through a fire hose, just saying, hey, I'm just trying to learn. He kept on saying, I'm just trying to learn the system, just trying to learn the system. It's like, all right, I can tell that's definitely weighing heavily on you. And then, you know, you flick at camp and he doesn't get a chance at all because he's hurt, which is such an important part of the install of the defense. And then the next thing you know, he's starting in week four against the Texans. And I think the good news about Cole Bishop, while he never became like an impact player, I think he went from, oh my goodness, this guy's a liability, to, okay, the defense can function. And now, hopefully, with an offseason under his belt, we can start to feel the impact of the playmaking skills, because obviously he's got a lot of athleticism. The team thinks a lot of him based on, you know, kind of wanting to trade up for him even last year. So I think that's what you need there out of those top two. You need Coleman to be what they drafted him to be, Bishop to be your starting safety and have some impact. And then I think the rest, there is some questions. I think Ray Davis will be similar to what he was last year. And I think that's a good depth player in addition to the kick return upside that he provides. Dwayne Carter, that's a player I'm concerned about. You know, I think the path to snaps for him are very, very complicated with all the additions that the Bills made in the draft. And, you know, maybe he's going to major more in the one tech position. And you watch him in college, you think, yeah, I don't know, I think this is more of a three tech. So we'll see how that body transformation and kind of a positional shift works for Dwayne Carter. But then I think the rest of it is, you know, we'll see. I think looking at the Cedric Van Pran Granger pick, I liked him a ton, but, you know, what's the path for him to get on the field? It might not be until next year, where Connor McGovern, David Edwards, two starters on the offensive line, they're on expiring contracts. Can he be a successor for either of those players? And I also look at Tylan Grable through the same lens. This is a player I'm very excited about. I thought he was awesome in camp. I thought he was awesome in preseason. He won the swing tackle job twice for this team, going into the season, beating out Ryan Vandermark. And then Grable had a core muscle injury. And then when he came back, he beat out Vandermark again. So I thought he was terrific in preseason. And I think I'm not sleeping on Tylan Grable as a potential successor for David Edwards at left guard, where from a measurables perspective, Grable's literally the exact same size as Edwards. And they tinkered with him during the offseason last year at guard. And so yeah, it could be another year or so on some of those guys. We'll see about Javon Solomon. Can he carve out a role as a designated pass rusher? But right now it looks like maybe a starting receiver, a starting safety, a depth running back, and, you know, a couple other depth players.
Yeah. And maybe it would take one or two becoming good role players at this point out of those day three selections. Joe Marino with us. One other thing I wanted to get to you with, Joe, is me and Jeremy earlier, we got sparked by a caller in the 6 o'clock hour on Kincaid and the season upcoming for him and how important this year is for him. And often you'll hear, like, hey, don't forget Kincaid. Like, when you talk receiver, don't forget about Kincaid. How do you look at, I think for me, like, the biggest two questions I have are, one, if he does take a big step forward, like, what does it look like? Like, how does he win? You know, some of these tight ends in the league, McBride is jumping over people and Kittle is running through people. And I don't know. When I think of Kincaid, I feel like he should be better at some more of the nuances of the position. And then also how valuable it would be for this offense if he does take that step forward. They already were 30 points a game, Brandon pointed out. But it's not to say that if he didn't take a step forward, that could be another layer on their offense that they didn't have last season.
Yeah, I think generally people are down on Kincaid. And I think part of that stems from, well, you thought this was going to be a target hog in this offense, you know, 120 targets or something like that. And, you know, the guy that really eats into what was vacated by Stephon Diggs. And, you know, that sort of happened, but not really. And so there's a lot of disappointment from people that picked him high in fantasy. And then your lasting impression is him dropping what should have been an all-time great throw in the history of the NFL from Josh Allen on the 4th and 5 against Kansas City, right? So there's not a lot of, like, good vibes with Kincaid right now. But if I could point to 5 metrics that I think are really critical when you reflect on the season that happened with Dalton Kincaid, I would say, first of all, he was terrific separating, right? Route running, that was always the calling card for Kincaid. He was terrific. Among the 41 tight ends in the NFL to run at least 200 routes in 2024, Kincaid was 8th highest in win rate in the league. And that's actually down from where he was number 4 in the NFL as a rookie. So you have a proven 2-year sample size of upper echelon route running in the NFL. Would like to also point to yards after catch. He was number 4 in tight ends and yards after catch per reception last year at 6.36 yards, and number 6 in missed tackles forced per reception at 0.18. So we've got yards after catch. We've got separation skills. Here's a major problem. Uncatchable targets. Among the 41 NFL tight ends with at least 200 routes run in 2024, only 69% of Kincaid's targets were catchable, the lowest in the league. When targeted 10 or more yards down the field, Kincaid's catchable target rate was 37%. Him and Josh Allen got to get on the same page and establish that chemistry so that way they can maximize on Kincaid getting open, which he is at a high, high clip relative to NFL tight ends. You also had The average depth of target increased. As a rookie, it was 6.5. It jumped to 8.3 in 2024. So there's obviously a bit of a shift in his type of role in the offense, and you could see how maybe the chemistry wasn't affected by that. But then also I want to point to target rate. Even though Kincaid did not hit all the production marks that everybody wanted in 2024, he was featured a ton. He finished the season with the highest rate of targets per route run of any NFL tight end that ran at least 200 routes. So I hope that those five metrics tell the story. We have separation. We have yards after catch. We have uncatchable targets. We're being used down the field, which signals a new type of role. And while the raw volume is not impressive, he's still being featured at a frequency that is the most of any NFL tight end right now. So it's got to come together. It's year three. We've seen it come together for a lot of Bills players in year three. And let's not be surprised when Dalton Kincaid is the next one, even though it seems like the world is down on the guy right now.
Yeah, really good stuff. If you, by the way, want more on all this, Joe just linked the link to his Substack, Herd Mentality, and you can find that on his Twitter, the Joe Marino. Well, one follow-up on, there might not be an answer to this, but that uncatchable target rate number, is it kind of equal between the two? Like, both of them have to improve on that? There wasn't, like, all these, or was it there are a bunch of plays where Kincaid is just open and Allen's missing him?
Yeah, I think it's mostly that. And part of the article that you referenced, I put every single target in succession from 2024 in a film reel that you can watch. Mm-hmm. And Kincaid's open, and we're missing throws. And look at the throw that he got injured on against the Colts where he hurt his PCL. The dude was wide open. Josh Allen led him out of bounds, and he tries to make the play and smashes his knee. Like, Allen's got to be better for Kincaid. And I know that he's the NFL MVP, and he's the best player in the league. Like, all of that's true. But he's got to be better for Kincaid.
Joe Marino. Last thing before, because we will not chat before the schedule release next week, I don't believe. You got what's your favorite home opener? Or even just opener?
Pardon?
Or just even opener, week one. What would you like to see them start with?
Week one, home, 1 o'clock, Patriots. Right. I think you put them in an 0-1 hole. They got a million new players, new coaching staff. Get them in week one, start the year 1-0, and ruin their hype right away. That'd be my plan.
Love it. At the Joe Marino on Twitter. Again, you can find that link to that Substack. Good stuff from him. Locked on Bills, Bills Squad, and Locked on NFL Scouting. You're everywhere. So thanks, Joe, again, for taking some time out for us, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Joe Marino on the Western Hotline. On those metrics on Kincaid are, it really does tell a full story of, there is skill there. There is talent there. It just, they've yet to kind of put it all together. And that's why for me, like, thinking about the two breakout candidates on the Bills offense this year, which I would think are Kincaid and Coleman. Not saying Coleman can't do this, but I would tell you that of the two, Kincaid is the more likely to break out. Just think there's more ingredients there. It's been confusing about how they're going to put it all together. But I feel like there are more ingredients there with Kincaid to have that breakout than there might be with Coleman. 803-0550 is the phone number. We got an open segment coming up next. I have some numbers on Bills and turnovers. I've been making this point all throughout the offseason about expect some regression the other way. Like, you're not going to have only 8 turnovers again. I looked up the last 11 teams to lead the league in turnovers and what they did the following year. So I got some data to back up how true or untrue this theory I've had about they're going to turn the ball over more. So get to that when we come back, and some open phone lines for you as well. I got some fun stuff planned coming up. Jeremy and Joe, this is WGR.